All set.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, welcome everyone. This is our quarterly meeting, and we can get right into it. I am going to take attendance for this meeting, and we will start with our newly appointed chairman. Congratulations, Keith Haley.
Present.
You are here. Present. Chad Farr. Is that a yes, Chad?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Amos Fatorma?
Yeah.
Kelly McDermott?
Yes, I'm here. Shelly's here.
Armella Ferrer?
Here.
Eve Hillier? Dave Pelagi?
Here.
Alternate Tony Ford?
I'm here.
Angel Torres? Okay. All right. So moving on to the agenda.
If I can just jump in real quick, Tyrell, just to remind everybody that if you're in a high volume area, just mute your phone by pressing *6. And if you'd like to speak, press *6 again and unmute your phone. That'll just keep so we can hear everybody that's talking when they need to. That's all.
All right. And for purposes of the recording, everyone who's on the call needs to acknowledge they're on the call. So this is Brian Sigmund. I'm the BESB director. Who else is on the call?
My name's Daryl.
Andrew Norton.
My name's Daryl, BESB staff, recording.
Andrew Norton, ADS legislative liaison. Anyone else?
I think I heard Tyrell Sampson.
Yeah, Tyrell Sampson. Supervisor of the call.
Frank Roberts?
Yeah. Okay.
Is there anybody else? Okay, we got Frank Roberts. Is there anybody else who's on the call who hasn't identified themselves? Okay, Mr. Chair.
All right, moving along. The first agenda is the minutes of the last meeting that were emailed out to us. So if somebody from the committee would like to make a motion, to accept those meeting minutes as presented. Anyone?
That's all right.
What was that? I missed it.
I said Chad Farr, I accept the motion for the minutes.
All right, can I get a second on that from another committee member?
Dave Pelagi, I'll second it.
All right, we got Chad with a motion, Dave Pelagi with a second. Any discussion on those? All those in favor, committee members, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. And any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries. So those will be accepted as presented, and then we move into old business, starting with the budget update.
Okay, and I can do that. So last time we spoke, was obviously at the annual meeting, in which we had discussed the budget actually was kind of stable, and it remains that way, obviously, because majority of our facilities are currently closed at this time, so our expenditures are probably at an all-time low, which is a good thing while we go through this transition of vending contracts and the hiccups that, you know, come with such a major move in that manner. In addition to going through this in COVID, which obviously has really put a damper on the pending income coming in. So with that being said, the bit of good news with the budget is we did receive our $325,000 sponsorship. It was received, I think, slightly after our last meeting. So that kind of puts our actual program budget roughly around, I'd say, $1.1 million balance. That's kind of where we've always carried over, just looking at previous budgets. So that's a good thing. On the flip side of that, and I think we've said this in the last meeting and it remains, is that if population is still heavily reduced in many of our state facilities, obviously the revenue coming in will be reduced, right? So not only do we run from a program standpoint of kind of being stopped on track, I mean, the revenue is also kind of taking a hit. The good news is we still are receiving our DOT monthly funds of, I believe, $54,000 a month. So that's been in addition to obviously the commissions that are coming in from Pepsi. We are due this month's commission, well, I should say October's commission, sometime this week. So I'll look to see what that number looks like. And, you know, my hope is that each month it just becomes greater as we continue to have, well, as Pepsi continues to install and finalize their responsibility in this. So overall, the budget remains, I would say, sound at this time. So we're okay. Okay. We are definitely okay. Does anyone have any questions in regards to the budget? If not, we can move. If not, we can move to the regulation update. And that would be from the subcommittee at the time, in which was Chad Farr, Brandy, and Rich. So, Chad, do you have an update?
Tyrell, could you just repeat who those committee members were? Because I never had that written down previously.
Yeah, so previously, the subcommittee was Chad Farr, Brandy Altagat, and Rich Brockett.
All right, and Chad, you're on the line. The reason I had this added was just I wasn't on the committee last year. So I just wanted to understand where we stand on that committee, if there's if there was any meetings, or if there's an update to be given, or if there's work to be done. I just want to grasp that as the chairman so I can move that along if need be.
Totally understand. Actually, Brandy and myself originally need to actually get together. We have not spoken in a while in regards to it. So that needs to be on my agenda to reach out to her and see if we can get that going once again. It kind of got, we dropped the ball on that a little bit.
No, I understand, and with all that's been going on, I get that, but I figured that's why I wanted to put it back on the agenda to make sure that, you know, if that's something that has to keep going, we'll go forward with that. And at the last meeting, Frank Roberts announced had some interest in sitting on that committee as well. So if, say, Brandy or Rich wants to sit out or they don't want to continue for whatever reason, I'm just throwing something out there. I know Frank had mentioned interest. I can check with him to see if he's still interested in that, just to see where we stand and what we have to do moving forward. So this is more of a check-in than anything else.
Yeah.
So
it definitely needs to get back on the agenda here for us. It obviously was a challenge with Brandy running the concession stand out there at Amonasset.
Right.
So it made it almost impossible for her to even speak on the, you know, to make any meeting plans. So, I kind of based on it, you know. So I will reach out to Brandy and see if we can get back on track with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's all I had for that, Tyrell.
Okay. All right. Okay, so with that, we can move into the vending contract, the transition update. As to date, I would say we are probably at 80% install with the Pepsi transition. Early on, I was a bit concerned with the progress that was being made, so much so that I had to reach out to DAS to kind of have them oversee this transition in a greater light to ensure that my concerns were valid. I can say basically after having that conversation and reach out to DAS, what we've established are twice a week calls with Pepsi, and what they've pretty much done is they've given us weekly updates like progress reports. So, and I can say ever since then things have really, really picked up. So they're at about 80% of install, vending install, and that's pretty good. I mean, you know, obviously a transition like this hasn't occurred in probably all of our times, well, mine especially. You know, Coke has always had the contract, so it was underestimated as to how much it's really involved. In addition, to doing this transition during the times of COVID. Bessie was faced with a lot of obstacles, whether it was just building entry, whether it was, Coke machines remaining in places in which, they're not allowed to move. And there was a lot of obstacles, but I think they've now gotten a process in which is really sound and has made great progress. Their goal typically is to install about 140 machines a weekend. The total amount of machines, I believe, placement was like 1,300. They're roughly around 800. Only reason why I say rough, because we were supposed to have a meeting today in which they had to cancel due to some situations beyond their control. So as of the last meeting we had, they were at 70-something percent. So I have to believe that it's definitely at 80 or plus. But they're doing well. They're responding to, complaint calls timely. I definitely feel much, much more comfortable, so much so that DAS has kind of backed off in their oversight and kind of just like, well, we're here if you need us, and so it's good. So I am certainly pleased with the progress being made with this transition, in considering all the obstacles that they have to face. So just want to let you all know that the transition is going well. And obviously, population will be the next bonus to this transition. Hopefully, getting to numbers that will really increase the anticipated commission from there. So that's what I have for that. So any questions in regards to Pepsi? If not, then we can move into new business.
Mr. Chair, under new business, this is Brian speaking. I'm going to request a motion, if possible, to add to the under new business a new opportunity that was presented to us after the agenda came out, a mobile ice cream concessions truck at the town of Glastonbury.
Can I get a motion from the floor to amend today's agenda to insert this agenda item from a committee member?
Chad Farr, I put a motion in to amend the meeting.
All right. And can I get a second from somebody?
Carmela Ferreira, I second it.
Thank you. And then everyone can unmute for a quick minute to vote. And all those in favor of amending today's agenda to add this item, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Then the motion carries. And I say we'll go right into that item right
now.
Ready.
Is the first item or the last item? Up to you, Mr. Chair.
Well, wherever you feel. Well, it doesn't matter to me. If you want to follow the agenda and do it at the end, that's fine.
All right. Yeah, we'll make this item D then.
Okay. So we'll go into the first item on, which is operator facilities.
Okay. So, all right. Operator facilities. As of today, obviously this is bleak news, but we obviously are pretty much at a standstill. The only operations that are operating would be 470 Capitol Ave, Michael Market, Bombardier, and Labor Department, both Michael Market, and the Wallingford Post Office. Vending, the seasonal locations have pretty much closed, obviously, for the season. And what we thought we were going to potentially be able to do, and this is with New Britain Courthouse, was possibly open softly with that location. However, COVID has reared its face back up to the point where it's, obviously places discomfort on both sides from a health and safety standpoint, in addition to the unknown of how that building is going to operate and if there would be that need of an abrupt shutdown. So with that being said, in Britain Courthouse, we have postponed that option to maybe revisit sometime at the end of this month for a potential review for a January opening. So, it's not good news, obviously. In addition to that, we've been notified by the DMV that due to COVID and public safety requests, or I should say public safety being the premise of this request, they've requested that our smaller locations such as Norwalk DMV, Danbury DMV, Bridgeport DMV, and Hamden DMV, we remove our concession stands in their entirety, so they can relinquish the space to be able to reseat or add seats to their customer base, which in their world, I believe, would provide additional opportunities of online appointments and also ensure public safety. You know, I think the situation with that location is that we did not receive a response as to how long this request stands. So, unfortunately, it put us in a position in which, obviously, we work under the authority of. We have to follow their request, especially if they're not looking to seek out anything that is of the same nature of what the Randolph Shepherd program can offer. And I can say that that is not the request. They simply wanted to have us remove our equipment to open up additional opportunity for day-to-day business. So at this time, I was able to figure out a way to have our concession equipment moved, stored temporarily, and during the time, so we can certainly reassess post-COVID. You know, my goal is after COVID to reach back out to the DMV to see if there is a need for our services, because ultimately things will look a lot different. As they stated to me, they are continuing to seek additional online services, which they believe will further minimize population in the future. So, you know, all we can do is kind of stand by and just wait it out to see where things lie and, you know, respond accordingly post-COVID.
Hi, Tyrell. This is Ellie.
Yep.
That being said, were these viable locations? I know these are people's livelihoods, but we were saying the committee and I believe the powers that be were insisted on, since COVID, a lot of things have come to light. Were these viable locations or money-making locations before?
I could speak for myself. Mine definitely was.
Okay.
So what I would say to that is just this, right? So obviously, not knowing anyone's financial needs, you know, so to say, if it was viable, I would say any location would be viable as long as it's above a dollar, right? You know, ultimately, if the program isn't in the negative, then it's a viable location. Now, I think the assessment would be once an operator either retired out or left the program, that would be a determination maybe from our program standpoint to say, you know, I'm not sure if this would, you know, potentially be a viable location to or an appealing location to another operator in the future. However, any existing operator in the program, I would say, would always remain, you know, would remain an operator regardless of the profit margin, just because it's their location and they feel it's viable to them. So so the opportunity for us to resume at these locations, and I would say the existing operators who are still operators, even, you know, with the request, they still remain operators in our program. Yes, I would look to refill that location with the existing operators. Any operator that may not want to resume, I think we as a program will reassess that location and make that determination if we want to continue there or not.
Understood. Thank you.
Yep.
Tyrell, I have a question about facilities.
Yep.
And it's somewhat hypothetical, but just so people know, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which most of us are on for unemployment, ends as of December 31st. As of right now, it has not been extended by Congress. The House back in May, they passed something twice that tried to extend it through January. It went over the Senate, went nowhere. And then there was another one that they tried to push, extend it through the end of what they called the health crisis. And neither has, I don't know if it's in the Senate or that's as far as it's gone. Nothing's been passed. So as of today, it ends December 31st. January 1st, none of us are going to have any income as far as unemployment. The bright side of that, possibly, I heard on the news that Congress is coming together this week, I believe, to possibly pass another bill of some sort or a package. I don't know if this is part of it or not. So that was the background to my question. Say in January, I've got no income. And could I go into my facility and sell chips and soda? Turn into a convenience store as opposed to a cafeteria? And I'm not even looking for an answer today. It's just something I'm throwing out there. Well, because if I went in there with one person, I might end up paying them more than what I actually bring in, and it might not be worth it. But I'm just thinking ahead, like what does happen with these facilities where people aren't making any money? Maybe they could go make a couple hundred bucks with the 50 people that are in the building. Maybe not.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and thank you for bringing that up in regards to the unemployment as well. So, yeah, I would say my answer to that is, there's no question we're going to have to do business different going forward. There's absolutely no question in my mind, and if there's any question in yours, trust me when I tell you we're going to have to do business different. Part of doing business different is going to obviously be the headache and the unfortunate part of maybe not seeing salaries of what once was. I shouldn't even say salaries, but just profit. And so becoming creative and also being able to determine when there's a need for you, right? So ultimately, in your case, let's say in mid-January, population starts to increase in the a couple hundred range, right? Let's say your building was typically maybe 1,000, but now you got a solid 200 people. I'm not opposed, and as long as there isn't any restrictions in place from a health and safety standpoint, of you resuming business as a soft opening and kind of providing a service in which will certainly provide a profit that's also in accordance to the health and safety protocols that are going to be in place and seeing what that does, obviously taking, and this is all going to be all risk, and then we're going to observe reward. I mean, this is the chances that we're going to have to take to just be able to. It's all about timing with businesses. It's when do you put your foot out there and how do you ply your foot? So in your case, like you said, if it's an operation in which you can single-handedly operate and you're providing a service within the scope of your ability, I'm not opposed to that, And if things start to ramp up and, now it comes to a point where a grill may need to be turned on, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is just this. You didn't miss that potential profit, right? So I would say that, trying to wait for some magic number of population isn't ideal either, but certainly if we can assess and play our odds correctly and you have the ability to take on more than maybe what you once were doing, then by all means, I think that's the way we're going to have to go. The mindset has to change in this program that you as the operator, and I speak for all operators in our program, have to be determined to be able to take on more. That is going to be the key for any of these operations to successfully rebound from a situation like this. If the mindset is or remains that I'll just wait for until I hire an employee, I can tell you now that your facility may be closed a lot longer than the person that's willing to say, you know what, like you just said, Keith, I'm willing to jump off and try something on my own. Because the loss to that trial is a lot less than you waiting on a population in which you believe warrants an employee, and then you'll find that employee is absorbing all of your profit, and you miss the boat as to what you were actually able to do on your own. So yeah, no, I'm not opposed to that, and I appreciate it, and that's the mindset that I think everyone needs to have, is that what can I do on my own? To be able to kind of flourish and get my feet back into the game. I'm just thinking
if you're not making anything, if the PUA doesn't get extended, you're making nothing. So if you go in and you make $200 a week, to me it's $200 more than I was making sitting at home.
Correct.
You know, so it was just, it's just a, I'm just thinking ahead, that's all, and I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention that, you know, if that's a possibility, we might have to think that way. Hopefully, you know, it was nice and it was reassuring to have fallen back on this PUA. I never thought in a million years, even in August, that we'd still be out. Well, maybe I had an inkling in August, but maybe in June or July, I didn't think I'd have to use all this unemployment until December 31st. But now we're in the realization that this is getting worse even now, so it could be, you know, it could be March before anybody starts coming to these buildings, or later. So I'm just, that's all. I just wanted to bring that up while we're on facilities, that's all.
I would say that I think it's definitely more comforting to allow for an operator to, you know, tap our shoulder and say, hey, I think I'm ready to get back in. And they say, just me, and, you know, help me build my location where I can do majority at this time on my own. And I think, to me, that makes a better stance as to saying, you know what, I think it is possible. I think you can do it. So, no, that's a good, that was good of you to make mention.
Just bringing it up, that I believe that was Keith just speaking about the pandemic. Yeah, the pandemic running out. I received an email last week from the Department of Labor stating if you have up to 39 weeks to collect, and a lot of people 39 weeks are up around December 12th due to the unemployment rate getting below 8%, they're cutting it off. So even though initially it wasn't until December, the end of December, if you've got those 39 or 36 weeks under your belt, December 12th is it for you. And if you don't have those particular amount of weeks under your belt, December 26th, that's a wrap for everybody. So it may cut off depending on when people started to collect or what credit they have. It may actually cut off a bit sooner. So check your emails. If you haven't gotten it, check your spam, because I got one last week.
Yeah, I received that same one, and it also said something about state unemployment. So if you got PUA and you received benefits somewhere else along the way, that also plays a role whether they cut you off or not.
Right.
It was a little confusing to me. You know, it's like, okay, well, I don't have 39 weeks, so I think I'm in the clear. But I called one of those numbers, and it was busy for like 15 minutes. I just gave up. But, yes, I received that email also.
With that, I think we've covered that. If there's no other questions, we can move into the field rep assistance. I just added that to today's agenda just to let you all know that, you know, myself and Tracy and the field reps, we meet every week via teleconference. And you know, the premise of the conversations are always obviously based around you all. As operators first, facility talk second, because I think it's important that you all know that in my mind, it's my goal to ensure that, you know, the field reps are being as much as assistance as they can at this time. Obviously, you know, their primary job focus and functions are to assist in the facility, but I mean, it is what it is. So I still want them to reach out, and I hope that they have been reaching out. I've been getting kind of pretty much progress reports, because every week I ask, all right, go down the list, you know, tell me about your operators. And I hope that you guys feel that they're assisting you the best they can with anything possible within their, you know, their general scope of knowledge and ability. Because that's kind of what I've asked of them, is that, you know, it's obviously not just a, well, there's no facility, but, you know, there's really nothing to talk about. I ask, just from a personal standpoint, that they check in with you guys and be of assistance. Because it's tough times, and I get it, I understand it. Yes, you know, I'm working, I get it. But, you know, I still obviously care, we all do, and I'm not just speaking on myself, but for all of you during this time, because it's important that we get through this mentally sound, right? Because this is all mental. This is, you know, this is reality stress playing into your minds, and which can make you all, you know, maybe get down and depressed, and I get it, you know. Idle time doesn't do good for many, so I just wanted to touch base and just let you all know that, you know, I do ask the field reps to check in with you guys weekly just to, you know, see if you guys need any assistance with filling out any of the applications for any of the assistance or whatever the case may be. Just even if you just need 5 minutes here of venting, you know, something to just kind of get your frustrations and your concerns off the plate. So I hope that's being done. So with that being said, did anyone have any questions or any issues or any concerns with the field reps and their assistants that you know of or heard of? If not, then we can certainly move along.
This is Brian. I'm just going to chime in on that. Certainly, like Keith, you brought up the idea about maybe the possibility of opening your facility in some lesser capacity, and I think that would be something that's a great topic to bring up to your individual field reps. And then obviously we know about this one potential request that you have, but what we need is this information so that we can then reach out to some of these building authorities to say, where are you at in terms of what are you thinking? Are you looking for any kind of food offerings whatsoever? And some of them we've even looked at having vending machines that the operator fills so that they don't really have a daily presence, but at least they get some vending commission from the vending machines that are put in place of serving food. So I think, unfortunately, with COVID having this uptick again, it's probably going to remain for a period of time that buildings are going to be sparsely populated, and so there may not be much in the way of an opportunity for a physical presence because there may not be that many people there to sell food to. But we can certainly reach out to building authorities and ask the question to kind of get the pulse of where they're at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, yeah, and to piggyback off of Brian, obviously the name of the game is it has to warrant a profit, right? I mean,
right.
And that's just it. So if population is there, then obviously, you know, there could be the potential for your physical presence. If the population is subpar, then there's still steps in which possibly or maybe we can do to maybe increase your vending commission opportunity while still awaiting the opportunity to be back in the physical. So,
hi, this is Shelby again. I have a question. I'm not sure if this is for Tyrell or Brian, maybe even Andrew. With dealing with my liaison with the building, they're under the impression, PPE, who is responsible for that? Is it different than actual like cleaning supplies that we normally would do, such as like wipes and other essential items that the building should be providing? And if so, is there some sort of written down anything that comes from public health or even OPM or even what do we deal with? I'm sorry.
Well, public, maybe public, it's the Department of Administrative Services you're thinking of.
Correct, VAS, that will say, what do we actually, as the operators, provide to keep our facilities with the PPE or any kind of cleaning? And what is the building supposed to actually provide? This is their, since it's the building staff that are actually utilizing the facility.
Okay, so this is Brian. I had sent out quite a few months ago when the governor opened up restaurant food service again, and then it was recirculated when there were some modifications to it. So there are requirements that the owner of the business, and so I think that kind of answers that question, Shelley, that the owner of that particular food service business, whether you have employees working under you or it's just you, there are certain things that as the owner of the business you're required to do, and you can't, you know.
Oops, somebody's home.
Hold on. Guys, there's a Nazi submarine off the coast. I think you should get undercover. I just heard it.
Thank you.
anyone on the call?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I am Andrew Norton.
I am.
I'm still here.
Okay.
I'm still here.
I'm still here. There.
Brian, are you there?
I'm still here at Bisbee. This is Daryl. Okay. I think we lost Brian.
Okay. Okay. So
I think it's that summary.
Okay. So,
definitely selling more code.
I think, and I don't know, I don't want to speak for Brian, but yeah, to clarify what Brian was saying is just that, is that, you know, early on, the guidance that we received was, you know, the buildings, and Andrew, you may know as well, that DAS in provided each building with the PPE first right to a specific area of purchase. However, when we talk about our program facilities and what products we can, you know, provide to the operator, there isn't any. It's of the mindset.
I apologize. I got disconnected from all of you. I don't know what
Okay, Brian, but you can finish your sentence. It sounded weird. When
I don't know what you last heard, so if I'm being redundant, because I don't know when I disconnected. So we can certainly recirculate out and through DDCD the requirements for businesses to have their operations. And, of course, with the resurgence of COVID, there's been some scaling back on some of those. So, Tyrell, let me work with you, and let's be sure that we get this information out to all of the operators, even though they're currently not working for the most part. Those that even have, you know, some minimal presence, there is a requirement for some of that sanitizing on a regular basis. Okay.
Well,
it's just some kind of question and what, who is supposed to provide and not, and it's kind of becoming a back and forth. So if I could get something concrete, that'll just, I think, put an end to all of the debating. So thank you, guys.
So what I'm thinking, Shelley, is, and I think from previous discussions, is the uncertainty lies in particular your building as to was the PPE equipment or product the responsibility of Bisbee on behalf of the operator, or was it operator's responsibility? Am I correct? Is that kind of where really the question lies?
It's more along the lines of they weren't doing anything because they're under the impression Bisbee should be getting it from the stockpile from the state.
Correct, and that's not, yeah. So, Brian, the question the question in specific is Shelley's building has notified her that they were of the mindset that Bisbee would provide this PPE to the operator. And I was of the mindset that is not the case, that that PPE equipment that DAS is providing is strictly for the building in specific.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that what they're providing is for their employees. This is
correct. And to me, actual location, it doesn't count. They don't provide it there.
And I would say that they are correct that your food service, your restaurant, if you will, is that's your business, and you would have to follow the requirements under the governor's reopen plan for food services. And if there's PPE that you're required to have, if there's modifications that you're required to have, those would be the responsibility as the business owner to do it. Now, if you then want to turn to Bisbee, to Tyrell, and say, this says that I need to have a partition here in order to separate this spot from that spot, or I need to be serving the coffee with the, you know, self-serve lids for each cup, and I need to be able to do that, then you can see about having us potentially make some of those purchases for you for your location. Those that buy them themselves, I believe it's a legitimate business expense because it's something you're required to have in order to run your business. But if you have particular items, but the first thing and the most important thing is that people, again, aren't familiar with the governor's latest guidance under the Reopen Connecticut plan and the sector requirements, which again have been scaled back as a result of the resurgence, I will be sure that this gets out fairly quickly. Okay?
All right. So with that, we can move along to the next agenda item, which is the United States Coast Guard Academy in New London. I'll start it off, and then Brian, I'm sure, will resume. We were reached out or notified by Terry Smith in regards to this potential opportunity. United States Coast Guard Academy in New London, their food program is set to expire, I believe, next year. And with that being said, what they call a SOURSA opportunity, which is kind of like an RFP, has gone out requesting, obviously, bidders or teaming partners to potentially bid on the opportunity. As far as right now, I know Brian has reached out to the United States Coast Guard just to obtain some information, because there's very, very minimal information received in regards to this opportunity, so much so that I can't even give you anything outside of the fact of just the knowledge of knowing that this opportunity is set to be available sometime next year. However, I do want to pass this along to Brian, because he's had some previous experiences in regards to this location, and also maybe be able to provide you with a little more information. So, Brian, could you add to this?
Sure. Just want to be sure people can hear me here.
Yep.
Good. I just wanted to be sure. So I became sort of indirectly aware of this from Terry Smith, who obviously many of you know who Terry is. He was on our call, did a training at the September meeting. And he has learned that this particular location should be available at some point toward the latter half of 2021, but we don't exactly know when that would be. So he gave me the names of the individuals who they had written to, they being the National Federation of the Blind, their vending, their Randolph Shepherd section, wrote to them, who are the contracting officers for the Coast Guard in Connecticut, to let them know that the National Federation of Blind considers that a Randolph Shepherd opportunity. And I then followed up with an email to the same contracting officers asking, can I just have some information? I'm understanding that this may be coming available. Could I find out a little more? I followed up with a second email that they did respond to, indicating basically, thank you for reaching out to us. Your information will be utilized when conducting our market research. So that's all I have for right now, is that they're conducting some type of market research on that. Now, there's one other component to this, and that's why I've asked if Andrew could join us, because quite a number of years ago, and I don't have it in front of me, but I believe Andrew does, I think it was in 2005, but Andrew will correct me if I'm off by a year or so. The Attorney General at the time, Richard Blumenthal, issued a formal opinion to me when I was the executive director on whether or not the agency, at that point we're a standalone agency, could partner with other outside entities in order to assist in the operation of food services. In the food service Randolph Shepherd industry, they're typically referred to as teaming partners. And at the time of the formal opinion, the question had come up not in regards specifically to the Coast Guard, but it was another location where I think the agency was recognizing that it would take a lot to have such a facility operated under the terms and conditions that are the requirements of the authority who's asking for the food service. And when it comes to military dining, at least my understanding is that all of the arrangements that exist at military dining have a teaming partner, because the requirements are quite significant in order to fulfill the obligations of that food service arrangement.